This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Friday Politics on WRKF and WWNO. The show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and your number is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We start with former Health Secretary for the great state of Louisiana, Rebecca Gee. It's by far the largest agency in Louisiana government. And Rebecca has stayed in our state. She is a native of Utah, educated on the East Coast at Columbia, University of Pennsylvania, and her medical degree is from Cornell, but she has taken a shine to the great state of Louisiana and to the city of New Orleans, where she is the CEO and founder of Nest Health. Nest Health has been recognized as one of the 10 most promising hybrid healthcare companies and one of the 150 most promising digital healthcare companies in the world by CB Insights. And she was featured on 60 Minutes in the last year. And she is here to talk about a few items, but it would be good, and that's one of the reasons why she's here, is to tell us about this evolution in her career. And it's a case in which she is in a spot of importance in regarding healthcare in our country and in our state. And Rebecca Gee, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim and listeners. It's wonderful to be with you today.
Well, tell us about Nest Health.
Yeah, so Nest is a company that finds children and parents who are not using primary care, have issues with housing, issues with food instability, tend to be using the ER as a primary source of care for a lot of reasons, could be transportation, could be illness. And then we just go care for them at home. And we work with health plans to find our highest risk families in the state. And then we spoil the heck out of them. We go there, we care for them with primary care team. We are able to do well baby exams, well mama exams. We take care of dad. We take care of other children in the home. And we're really there, not to compete with Ochsner or Tulane. In fact, both of those have invested in us. We're there to care for those who, if not for Nest, would be getting no health care. So we're extremely proud of this model. And of course, we know that the best way to have health is to have a healthy family. And the best way to start being healthy is right at birth or even before. And so we're proud to be creating generational health betterment in this great state and hopefully beyond.
And we have issues in our state. The U.S., unfortunately, despite having these great minds and great people in medicine, we have infant mortality rate, for example, that is not anywhere close to being top of the world. And in poor places like Louisiana, the problems are exacerbated. How significant is the health care crisis in our state, or would you call it a crisis, Dr. Gee?
Well, I would. Listen, we are, I want to say this is, my former career as a public official was in government. This is private sector. So I have created a venture-backed company that is creating jobs here in Louisiana. We have 38 jobs we've created. We're bringing tax dollars here. We're creating a model that is being looked at in Illinois and New Jersey and Arizona. So this is Louisiana born, but it's fun to be part of something that's spreading nationally. Louisiana isn't always the worst, right? We might be the worst at some of the outcomes, but not when it comes to good ideas and innovation and entrepreneurship. So I'll say that we've had incredible support from our local funders, whether it's Hal Calais or Tulane. We were their first investment. Or Ochsner, we have had incredible support here. But yes, we have bad outcomes. And what's shocking to me, Jim, is that we go into homes, when these homes are within a mile of my home here in New Orleans. And we go into homes, there's no food, right? I did a home visit a few weeks ago, and this little boy, all they had left to eat was two Rice Krispie treats, and he gave me one of them. And I thought, man, why is this happening in America? In this case, grandma had no car, they had nowhere to get food, so this is the kind of stuff that just shouldn't happen in America. So we've got to deal with our poor outcomes by dealing with economic opportunity, by dealing with poverty, by dealing with lifting people up. And by God, if we're going to be a pro-life state, let's take care of the damn babies that are born. Sorry for the, you know. But anyway, let's take care of these darn babies who are born once they're born. And that's what Nest is doing. Let's take care of these families and lift them up and make sure they have opportunities for health. And that's how we undo this stuff. You don't start when people are seniors. And that's what we see is a lot of the efforts are out there, and it's just too late, right? If we want healthy people, you need to have healthy women, number one, and you need healthy children. And if you start any later than that, you're just playing catch up your whole life.
Well, Dr. Gee is an obstetrician and gynecologist. As we noted, she was the state health secretary for 4 years. And she did so, and a listener correctly notes, this is Tracy at the Capitol, that she was a person who believes in reproductive rights, but served in an administration led by Governor John Bel Edwards, who sincerely believes that abortion should be banned, and a legislature that's way farther to the right on this issue than Governor Edwards, who did believe in exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother. Many lawmakers won't even buy into that. How difficult, how difficult was it for you to operate in that environment when your beliefs were at odds at times with the administration and with the legislature?
Yeah, you know, you have to, live my life with my moral compass. And obviously, you know, Governor Edwards got elected, not me. I was not the politician. I was helping him run his health department. He had his faith in me, despite the fact that we had differences. So let me say that I think that's admirable, right? He was willing to choose someone who I am a women's doctor, right? So I was trained to care for women. And my position is that whatever a woman, which is what is needed for her health, that is what my job is to provide. And unfortunately, the state has gone very far to the right on this, where we can't even, in some cases, treat hemorrhage when women are bleeding. That is unacceptable, right? So no matter how we feel about these issues, we need to be able to take care of women. So that has happened, unfortunately. I do feel we're going to come more to the center because no one wants women to die in pregnancy. Let's just be honest here. But look, I ended up, part of the decision for me to leave was my name was on a Supreme Court case that was June Medical v. Gee. And if that had gone through, that would have been Dobbs. And I did not want it to be the Gee decision that would have changed this option for women everywhere in this country. That didn't feel comfortable. So that was part of the decision. That being said, so we expanded healthcare to 600,000 people. And you know, Governor Edwards is and was an incredibly morally upstanding individual who I was proud to serve. And we agreed on just about everything that we didn't agree on. But by the way, look, what big problem here in America is we're so darn intolerant, right? So part of it is we have differing opinions. This is what makes it a great country. How come we other people and demean people and insult people when they don't agree with us? We've got to listen to each other more. And so that's what we did, right? I was listening to him. He was listening to me. We didn't always agree, but we had mutual respect. And again, I think that's what we need more of in politics.
When you testified before legislative panels, though, you were badgered at times, weren't you?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, you have to have, it's three things, thick skin, a short memory, and nerves like sewer pipes, right, to go into politics. You don't go into politics to have a friend. You know, I have a golden doodle. That's where you get, or your husband or whatever. You're not there to make friends. And I had the blessing that I went in there to make the change I could. And I did so with a governor who said, look, go do health, go do it well. Don't do my politics for me. And he didn't, you know, he let me take on hepatitis C. We are now getting close to having a national program built on our work, which will treat everyone in America with hepatitis C. We did the Medicaid expansion, great work on maternal mortality. So again, look, being in politics, you're going to be badgered, but the payoff is that you get to do really good things for people of this state that I love. And what a wonderful opportunity that was.
Governor Edwards, as you noted, took the Medicaid money that is available under the Affordable Care Act at almost nothing as far as an expense to the state, but yet Republican governors in states that are regarded as booming states, Florida, Texas, Georgia, and then in a state that has more problems than we do, Mississippi, they've refused the money. Imagine not taking the Affordable Care Act money for Medicaid in Mississippi. That is hard to accept, isn't it?
Well, it's just flagrant stupidity, Jim, because what this money has done for us is bring in billions of dollars, saved us hundreds of millions of state general fund. It's saved lives. I mean, look, healthcare is a right, right? Do we want to live in a country where you can't get healthcare unless you get it in an emergency room? And by the way, we're paying for it anyway, because we pay for emergency room care. So, it's all politics, unfortunately, and it's dumb because, you know, our babies don't wear red or blue diapers.
We'll speak more with Rebecca Gee, who's on a roll after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Dr. Rebecca Elizabeth Gee, now the pride of New Orleans. She was Secretary of Health in our state from 2016 to 2020. And your number, if you'd like to get in under the wire, we will take some calls and ask for you to be brief, is 877-217-5757. We have an election 25 days from now. And should Donald Trump lose the election, it will likely be because of the Dobbs decision on abortion. Because right now, despite the fact that he was outperformed by Kamala Harris in a debate, just as Trump outperformed Joe Biden in the preceding debate, Trump has moved ahead in almost all the swing states, albeit very, very close. 0.4 in Pennsylvania, 0.9 in Michigan, 0.5 in Arizona, 0.5 in North Carolina, 0.5 in Georgia. Harris leads by 0.3 in Wisconsin. So the betting odds in Las Vegas, as a Real Clear Politics reports this morning, a 54% chance that Donald Trump will win the election. So, Rebecca Gee, what would that mean in the area where you are an authority as far as women's reproductive rights and health care in general?
Well, a couple things. Number one is that generally the federal politics don't, you know, around health, other than, let's say, the Affordable Care Act, right? So Trump did a lot to try to undo the Medicaid expansions, et cetera. And as we remember, it was John McCain who prevented that. So he's given it a go around. I don't think he would try to take away Medicaid expansion again. I don't know, but I think that's in the past. You know, interestingly, J.D. Vance, you know, I am now a venture-backed capitalist, right? I am a venture capital-funded for-profit entrepreneur, and J.D. Vance worked at a venture fund. He has close ties with some of my colleagues there, and, you know, he has a lot of Silicon Valley backers, so I think, you know, there's benefits there. Certainly, Kamala has fought for reproductive rights. She has made that very clear. Many of us would like to see the choice be between a woman and her doctor again, instead of between legislatures and the women of the respective states. Although I'm not sure, you know, right now really it really is in the states. And so I'm just not sure that much more will change. We've already had the Dobbs decision. I think this is where we stand. And now what I'm about, Jim, is how do we take care of these babies that are now born? How do we prevent the need for abortion by making sure that women have birth control and good health and good mental health and healthy relationships? And let's make sure that they have the support they need when they do have a child. Let's go into the home and make sure she's got education about what's going on with her baby, and how can you be a good mom, and how can we support you, mom? What can we do to help make your job easy? We know it's hard in America to be a mother. We don't have enough paid family leave. We don't have affordable child care. Transportation's often lacking. And, you know, we don't have universal pre-K. If we really believed in healthy kids and healthy minds, we would be investing more in these kids and their minds. So, anywho, that's what we're about, and that's where I think the future needs to be until, you know, the politicians with a lot more clout than I have will be deciding these other issues, and certainly the courts. But yeah, I think I don't see a problem for Nest in a Trump administration or a Harris administration. However, obviously I am I'm going to vote for Kamala, and I have a T-shirt that says Kamala gets out the stubborn orange stains. You know, I like to wear that around. But anyway, and I have Trump people, and I have Trump, you know, I have MAGA hats in my family. You know, look, I think part of it is we all have to have a sense of humor, for goodness sakes, right? I mean, the end of the world's not going to come. Either way, life will go on. We're still going to have to compromise. We're still going to have to make choices, and we're still going to have to support our children. So let's just, you know, that's my opinion.
All right. We're in the lightning round with Rebecca Gee, who, by the way, a listener asked, she is the parent of five children, including identical twins. And she has actually done something that people like me will never do. She's given birth. James in Metairie, you're on. Good morning. Please be brief, James.
Good morning, Jim, and to your guests. Miss Yee, the radical anti-abortion fanatics in the state masquerading as pro-lifers tell us they're going to take care of the babies from forced pregnancy.
All right, what's your question, James?
Okay, how is free baby formula and diapers going to financially help a mother when the child is 15 years old? Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, we need a lot more of that. You know, one of the things we're really proud of is we just got, and again, I want to make clear what Nest does is we go into homes and we provide mental health care, physical health care, nutrition to all ages and stages, and we help people get those programs that are available to them. So if you don't have baby formula, maybe you can have food stamps that can help feed your teenager. But we're all about that. And I think one other thing we're doing is we're looking at literacy. We just got, okay, my chief of staff's with me, 12 or 14, 14,000 books.
Yes, 14.
To give out to moms, you know, help her with reading, her children. So, look, I think what I'd like to do, the message to listeners, is let's help companies like Nest, right? Let's get out there. If we want a better state, we got to start with our youth and you know, look at literacy. We all have a role to play in supporting our mothers and our children. And, you know, I have two sets of twins. I feel like I've done my part And I have a middle child. He feels weird because he's not a twin.
Right.
But anyway,
let's go to the phone lines. I want to get a few more in with Rebecca Gee. Pam in Baton Rouge. Hi, Pam. You're on. Good morning.
Good morning to you and your guest. I was interested in finding out whether or not Nest Health is something that's in Baton Rouge, or is it limited to New Orleans? And are there any future plans to expand if it's just to New Orleans?
Oh, Pam, great question. We are dying to come to Baton Rouge. We would like to be there in January. We are talking to our health plan partners about this today, but we actually even have a nurse in Baton Rouge ready to go. So we want to be there as soon as we can. And then we're looking at Shreveport, too. So, yeah, the goal is to expand this to as many families in Louisiana as we can. And then also we're looking at places like Chicago and in Camden, New Jersey, and things like that. So,
all right. Patricia in Baton Rouge. Hi, Patricia. You're on with Dr. Gee.
Good morning. Thanks so much for helping with the Medicaid expansion and supporting our rural hospitals. My question is, with the new abortion law that we have, some people are suggesting that that might cause OBGYNs to leave our state or prevent new OBGYNs from coming to work here.
Has that been the case based on what you know?
There's been some data that says yes. I mean, the bottom line is I was trained at Harvard, right? I did my OB residency there, and we could do whatever it took to take care of a woman. I do think these young people say, look, why would I go train in a state where I can't properly manage a miscarriage or if there's a hemorrhage, or they, let's say they want to provide, you know, let's say you have a fetus with no head, right? And maybe they want to learn how to take care of that for their patient, do an elective termination. If that's not available, they may choose other states. We're seeing some of that. Again, I think that people will still come here and train, right? There are people from Louisiana. They love Louisiana. I think we have to solve the bigger issues, which is even if you're not for abortion, we need to be able to provide well woman care. And I think all of us, I mean, I don't know, who is for a child is raped at 10 years old and they're supposed to have a baby? I mean, I don't know about that. That makes no sense to me. So how about we fix that kind of thing? That's just ridiculous. But anyway, that's the stuff that I hope we can fix so that we can get, you know, more people here. But yeah, I think we're doing okay. But again, I think these laws do have impact.
Let's go to David in Atlanta. What's your question, David?
Good morning, Dr. Gee. Donald Trump said,
"What's your question, David?"
Well,
Jim, I haven't been on 5 seconds.
But you're about to make a statement. I asked for a question. Well, we're short on time, David. We're short on time. Go for it, please.
Well, Donald Trump said he'll take funds away from any school that mandates masks and vaccines. How could this country tolerate such ignorant people serving in office?
All right. What about vaccines?
I think well, look, that's for the voters to decide, and that's why we have a wonderful democracy here. People can decide what they want to tolerate and what they don't want to tolerate. I mean, I personally am for vaccines. I vaccinated all my children. We all just went in and got our COVID and flu. It's actually a great time to do that if you haven't done it, because these seasons are coming. But look, unfortunately, vaccines have become political. They shouldn't have been. They work. They're one of the most life-saving things that has been invented in human history. So anywho, but that is the voters to decide.
All right. Well, Dr. Gee, president, founder, CEO of Nest Health and stayed in New Orleans, and is the daughter of Gordon Gee, who has been a university president for 45 years. I think that's the longest in history. He's at West Virginia now. Come from good stock, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. Always a pleasure, Dr. Gee. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim, and to the listeners of it.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757 for Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF. Albert Guillory is with us, former state senator and former state representative from Opelousas, and he is a candidate in the newly crafted 6th District. His opponents are Cleo Fields and Quentin Anderson, both Democrats, and a poll Jim Kitchens issued last week showed Cleo Fields at 42% and Albert Guillory at 25%, Anderson, I think, at 9%, and about a quarter of the electorate undecided as we approach the finish line. So Cleo Fields is within striking distance, if the poll is accurate, of winning in the primary, but it will be a heavy turnout. And much of the district, not a majority, much of the district is Republican. And Albert Guillory is a black Republican, one of 22,000 black Republicans in Louisiana. So no matter who wins, an African American will represent the new 6th district. Albert Guillory, how's it looking on the trail right now?
It looks great, Jim, and good morning. Glad to be here with you. We're having really good responses across this 300-mile-long district. We are putting a lot of energy into this, and people are seeing our signs and reading our material, and we're getting an excellent response.
Well, how much will national politics affect this race? We have a state that is fiery red when it comes to national politics, and for that matter, statewide politics. But you're in a district that I would suspect in the 6th district, Kamala Harris will win, but it may not be by the margin some people would think. How does that affect your race?
Actually, we are very comfortable with that, with those statistics. A lot of black folk, black men particularly, are going to vote not for Ms. Harris, but for Mr. Trump, and they're also going to vote for Albert Guillory.
Well, today, front page, New York Times, it mentions Donald Trump in racial politics, saying the former president has accused migrants of poaching black jobs and Hispanic jobs, which is inaccurate according to labor statistics. He told Latino voters in Las Vegas that illegal immigrants were totally destroying our Hispanic population. He promised women in Pennsylvania he would be their protector and they would no longer be abandoned, lonely, or scared, a vow based on the hyperbolic premise that criminals who happen to be immigrants are lurking around every corner. Racial politics is not new, certainly not new to our area, but is that a factor in this race? And sometimes do politicians go too far trying to stir up the masses?
To answer the second part of your question first, yes, sadly, sometimes our politicians have been guilty of, and that's on both sides of both parties, have been guilty of using race to stir up people and get people angry and divided And that's the saddest thing about it, the level of division that we're having in this country today.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But.
No. Go ahead.
No, well, you've been in numerous campaigns, and this time around, I think you'll probably get more votes than you've ever received in any race, including those you won. Some people might be surprised by that, but as I stated, there is a Republican base, and you are a minority candidate, so I think you're a viable candidate. Is there any way on God's green earth that you can force Cleo Fields into a runoff, in which, of course, it'd be a much lower turnout election?
We do expect that there will be a runoff. I expect to be the second vote getter, possibly even the first, but it'll be probably a runoff between me and Cleo Fields. And I do think that it'll be very, very close, much closer than that poll indicates. Our polling indicates something very different, but that's not an official poll. It's a
poll conducted for you. James and Harvey. James, good morning. You're on with Senator Elbert Guillory, candidate for Congress in the 6th District.
Good morning, sir. This is going to sound bad, but I'm going to tell you what I feel. I remember the Southern strategy. I remember people like Lee Atwater. I remember that in this state, we had to fight for the district that you're running in. I remember words like DEI. So to a person like me, which I can't vote for you because I'm not in your district, but for people like me, what would you tell us why we should vote for you, especially considering who the leader of your party is?
I would ask that you, if you have a problem with the leader of the party, set that aside and choose the person who has the greatest amount of experience in government and law. My education background, my experience in government, my success in government. If you just look at what I did while I was in the Louisiana legislature, I was legislator of the year twice in my first 6 years, admitted to the Justice Hall of Fame when I wrote and had passed unanimously the Louisiana law that permits people, the reentry law that permits people to get educations and work release.
All right. Well, we know about your background, which is impressive, but I think James brings up a point that he believes that your party, in particular the leader of the party, is not in step with rights for people of color and perhaps minorities as a whole. Is that fair, or is that an exaggeration against former President Trump?
I think it's an exaggeration. If you look at what he did for the black communities of America when he was president, he had an excellent record. Actually, in the last 15 years, he probably has the best record in employment, in getting people onto off welfare and onto jobs. A lot of the things that he did, his work for getting inner cities employment and businesses, HBCUs, right. his work with black colleges.
Well,
so I think he gets a bad rap. His mouth gets him into some difficulties sometimes, but his delivery has been excellent.
Well, he does have a way of particularly singling out minority people, particularly minority women, including his opponent, as being dummies. He's called her a dummy. That some might say is a dog whistle. What do you say?
I wish that he would be a little more statesmanlike in his presentations. I don't believe that demeaning my opponent is a good way to run a campaign. I tell people about Elbert Guillory. not about my, I have nothing negative to say about my opponent. I have everything positive to say about myself.
Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on with Senator Guillory.
Hi, Mr. Guillory. Good morning, Jim. Mr. Guillory, I want to know, what are you doing now and what will you continue to do if you win this election to stop the misinformation and outright lies that are being told about the help that's available to the victims of the recent hurricanes?
All right. Are you following that story, Senator?
Yes. Yes, I am. I do. If, for those recent hurricanes, I am saddened by the fact that the government response has been so thin and so slow, especially when we are dumping billions mm-hmm. of dollars into other countries when our own people need things, not just for hurricanes, but our roads and bridges are crumbling. We have veterans sleeping on the bridges. We need to do better in taking care of Americans before we do what those couillons in Washington, D.C. are doing with our money.
A question from a listener at Louisiana State University, the LSU board, and we'll talk with Greg LaRose about this. It's in the Louisiana Illuminator today. It passed a resolution Thursday to eliminate some diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in the university system. The black members did not participate in the vote. They made a statement by not participating, but you got kicked out of Southern University many years ago for insulting a U.S. Senator, Alan Ellender. You called him a lunatic, and some would say that's free speech, but it cost you your position. You had to go elsewhere to get your education. What about this turn, perhaps, to the good old days that some would like, in which universities were segregated and race was something we didn't talk about because we didn't have to? What do you make of it? Is that a fair assessment of where we are?
Jim, I am proud to say that I was on the team that created affirmative action, got it before the U.S. Supreme Court and had it legalized and became the law of the land. Very proud to say that I was on that. Unfortunately, it has gone too far to the point where we have people like Mayorkas running an agency for the government, and he has no background, no competence. What we want, we've gotten away from merit, and what we need to do is bring back merit. Fairness to everyone, but you just got to be qualified to get the job. You can't just walk in and say, hi, I'm a female, so I should get this job, or hi, I'm black, I should get this job. That's not enough anymore. It has hurt America.
877-217-5757. We'll be back after this quick timeout and hear more from Senator Guillory and Greg LaRose. This is Jim Inkster, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana, Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF, your number 877-217-5757. Robin Dow producing, and we're wrapping it up with Albert Guillory. Greg LaRose, the editor of the Louisiana Illuminator, is on deck. But Skipper and Gonzalez, I know you've been waiting for a while. Good morning, Skipper. You're on.
Good morning. Yes, thank you. I wanted to ask your guest, I like to simplify things since Daddy always said I was simple-minded. And I put it that if you truly want more social programs and more welfare for your children, then you should vote Democrat. If you want jobs for your children and the dignity that comes with a job, then you should vote Republican. Every time Harris attacks businesses, just remember she's also attacking jobs because there's no jobs without businesses.
All right. Albert Guillory, you were a Democrat, and you became a Republican. Did you do that for political reasons, or did you do it because you had some sort of enlightenment or epiphany in your dotage?
I did have an epiphany, and I agree with Skipper. It's having a lot of people just on the government dole does not serve the country well. We do need to have people who can work and support their families. There's a pride and a dignity.
Well, isn't a government job a dignified job in most cases? I think most people work pretty hard to work for the government.
Oh, I'm not demeaning government jobs. I mean, being on the government dole where you just get a check.
I got you.
And
I got you.
But, you don't have to go to work.
But as we know in America, more people, more white people are on welfare than minorities. Byron in Baton Rouge, you got to be brief. You're on, Byron. What's your question?
I just wanted to point out a few facts.
What's your question?
The Republicans have not won the popular vote in the last past eight presidential elections.
That's not correct. George Bush II did win the popular vote, the overall vote in 2004. But you're right. Democrats have won 7 out of 8, and yet have only 5 out of 8 victories because of the Electoral College. And we've gone through that ad nauseum, but the Electoral College is overdue to be extinct. But it benefits one party, and as long as it does that, it's going to be a tough sell to get rid of it. Zach in South Baton Rouge, you'll be our final caller for Senator Guillory. Hi, Zach. Good morning.
Good morning. Jim, are you fact-checking this guest? Because what you just said about the...
What's your question, Zach? What is your question?
Jim, can you give a guest a chance to say something, please?
No, to ask a question, yes, but we're short on time, and if you're going to attack me or the guest, you can do that at another time.
My question is, are you fact-checking your guest?
Yes, I fact-check guests, but every time somebody says something I disagree with, I don't correct them because sometimes it is an opinion, and opinions are not facts. Opinions are opinions. So, Zach, thank you for calling, sir. And thank you, Senator Guillory. Good luck on your campaign, sir. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Jim, before I go, may I say one quick thing?
Sure.
We were talking about DEI. In New Zealand, for the first time, an LGBT naval commander, a woman running a naval ship, has run the warship aground. It exploded and burned. The first warship in the Western world since World War II to be destroyed in such a manner. She was not qualified. DEI. She was a DEI selection.
All right. Well, a lot of DEI selections, I think, are qualified and would not have that opportunity without some government intrusion. Otherwise, we would still have... a white person in charge at Louisiana State University. And as we segue to what Senator Guillory was alluding to, I noted it earlier, a caller asked about it. The LSU Board of Supervisors passed a resolution yesterday to eliminate more diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in its system. Piper Hutchinson has the story at the Illuminator, and Greg LaRose is the editor. What do you make of this? And it's with President Tate, of course, in charge, who is regarded as perhaps the foremost critical race theorist in America, but he is doing this. Obviously, he's signing off on it. He is the boss. What do you make of it, Craig?
Yeah, it seems to be... Good morning, Jim. It seems to be a further advance toward removing anything that essentially is labeled DEI from the campus, although President Tate is insisting, or at least early on, he insisted that this won't really divert the university from its principles. He just basically wants that language removed. And I think the bigger concern is that you're seeing a growing political influence over the decisions being made at the university rather than, you know, things that are stressed in terms of academic integrity.
Well, and Piper Hutchinson in her story noted that the African-American members of the board did not participate in this vote. They did not voice opposition, but they did not want to be part of this resolution. Is there any symbolism to this?
You might read that into it. The chairman, Jimmy Woods, was there, who is black, but...
Yeah, he did. You're right. Collis Temple, James Williams, and Valencia Jones left the meeting before the resolution was voted on, but Wood stayed. You're right.
Yeah, I guess this, you know, you might consider it some sort of protest by absence, perhaps. But Yeah, no one really voiced opposition to this. So, yeah, it would seem that this anti-DEI movement has, whether by voice or lack thereof, the endorsement from the board to see this through.
The board resolution requires administrators to provide them a report within the next 90 days, including a detailed listing of programs and positions that have been eliminated or will be eliminated, and we will follow this. Now, Greg wrote a story about Senator William Morgan Cassidy, the senior senator for Louisiana, who voted to impeach Donald Trump and voted to uphold the election, the only Republican to do either one of those in our delegation in Senate or Congress or in the House. You say that he was touting his rating from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. He made the dean's list. Is this curious for a guy who's regarded as a moderate, or what do you make of it, Greg?
It is, I think, rather unfortunate. Again, this was a commentary of mine recently. If you're not familiar with the National Sports Shooting Foundation, they've really kind of taken over the helm of the gun rights lobby, with NRA kind of falling a bit into the background with its leadership struggles. And I just, I found it, if nothing else, rather poor taste. Louisiana is not much different from the rest of the country, where we've seen a spate of school shootings, a real abundance of threats being made online, some imposters just saying, kids saying, "I'm going to shoot up the school." So it kind of came across when the senator uses an academic reference like Dean's List, it seemed rather tone deaf to be unaware of what's clearly a growing public health problem. And I think you can classify this under mental health as well as the threat to physical safety at our schools. For the senator to tout this high ranking in regards to his position on gun rights and his, you know, he didn't tout this, but it's been reported that he's a rather willing recipient of money from the gun rights lobby to his campaigns.
Congressman Clay Higgins is not concerned with possible House censure over his post, saying that basically people from Haiti should go back home. Your thoughts? It's on the Illuminator, by the way, this latest story.
Yeah, our Lake Charles-based freelancer Natalie McClendon caught up with him at a town hall in Jennings the other night. And, yeah, he is not overly concerned. And let's face it, the censure is essentially just like a verbal slap on the wrist. It doesn't come with any punitive measures. So he's, you know, I think, as I wrote in another commentary, this, I think, really plays to the people who are certain to put him back in office come November 5th.
Well, Greg, thanks for joining us today, and we'll be following you on the Illuminator. Hopefully hear from you next week. Thank you, sir. Good to talk with
you. Sounds good, Jim. Same
Thank
here.
You. And yesterday, Ethel Kennedy died. She was 96. She was the widow of Robert Francis Kennedy, the U.S. Senator from New York, who was shot on June 4th, 1968, died 2 days later at Good Samaritan Hospital in Los Angeles. Bobby Kennedy was only 42 years old, and he and his wife Ethel had already had 11 children. One, they'd had 10, and she was pregnant at the time of his death with daughter Rory, who was born December 12th of 68. Four daughters, seven sons, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but she had an amazing life, as did her husband, although his was short. And to put things in some perspective, Bobby Kennedy, if he were alive, would be 98 years old. He's been dead for 56. Jimmy Carter just celebrated his 100th birthday. And it was 49 years ago today, October 11, 1975, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton got married in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Happy anniversary to the Clintons. And Saturday Night Live debuted as Saturday Night. Howard Cosell was hosting a show by the same name on ABC, so the first season it was Saturday Night, but here was Chevy Chase back in the day.
Live from New York, it's Saturday Night!
And that show starts its 50th season. 50 years for Saturday Night Live. Thanks for joining us today. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and stay tuned.